Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 74 of Nerd Pride Radio. 74, the minimum wind speed in miles per hour to qualify a storm system as a hurricane. So ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there are like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. Oh, my co-host this week is Chuck. Chuck is a semi-friend of mine who, in grade school, got beat up by a pack of wild kindergartners back when we were in third grade, I think. But, you know, to be fair, the whole kindergartner surprise attack was coordinated by Eddie Ranieri, who I think was a sixth grader at the time and kind of a genius. So, you know, poor Chuck. He didn't stand a chance. Anyway, enough of that. This is the time for... First, this is the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list. The best off stuff off that list from my handy dandy pocket mod gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. Whew. All right, straight into the master list. First up. That's right. It must be time for a little bit of feedback. I got a note from Akiva, and Akiva says, in reference to episode 73, I loved the story about your brother puking at the sight of green. In fact, that story is what got me hooked on the Animal Cast years ago. Someone recommended it to me, and in the first episode, I listened to you and Kyle tell that story, along with other stuff from your childhood. I thought that was hysterical, and that's what hooked me. And then, of course, Kyle went away, and we get stuck with just you. Aw, thanks, Akiva. That's so sweet. Yeah, Akiva's been one of the longest-time listeners, and, I mean, from, again, way back in the Animal Cast days, back when the show was entertaining and funny because I had a partner and we were awesome together. Now it's just me rambling on about boring stuff. But I appreciate you putting up with me. It's getting my numbers up. Thank you. What's next? Oh, a little meta talk.
Oppenheimer!
Yeah, meta talk is where I just pull back the curtain and talk about the podcast, the website, stuff going on behind the scenes. And what I wanted to talk about today was podcast length. I'm going to ask you guys for some feedback on this because, I mean, obviously I've done the fingertips episodes, which can be anywhere from 5 to, you know, 15, 20 minutes. Most of my episodes run something like an hour 15 to an hour and a half. Sometimes I've gone a little longer, sometimes I've gone a little shorter. Today, for example, is going to be a short podcast just because it's a weird day and I'm low on time, but I want to make sure I get something out there. So, in general, though, 75 to 90 minutes seems to be about my average, if I'm thinking correctly. And the last few weeks, I've noticed that anytime I pull up a podcast to listen to that's not my own, anything that's over about an hour, a minute 15 is okay, but anything longer than that, one of my first thoughts is, oh, God, 2 hours, this better be worth it. I mean, this because I've got a bunch of podcasts I listen to that, you know, are an hour and 50, 2 hours at a shot, stuff like that. And I still listen to them because I still enjoy them, and I wind up having a great time with them. But there's always that kind of dread factor of, oh, I'm in for a long one. I hope it's good. And of course, I've also learned that you know, I don't have to listen all the way to the end if they're boring. I mean, there's some guests on some shows that's like, yeah, okay, after 15 minutes, I've had enough of this guy. I can move on. And so I was just wondering with you guys, has my, you know, 75 to 90 minutes, has that been about where you like it? Is that intimidating to anybody? Is there anyone who occasionally doesn't listen just because it's just so much damn stuff to get? Of course, when I only, you know, put out podcasts sporadically, I guess that's not really overloading you with information, but you know what I mean. And so I'm kind of considering that, and I can't really see myself shortening too much without some real concerted effort, because I always aim for, you know, a half hour for the first bit. You know, by the half hour mark, I should be hitting Podomatic, and then by an hour, I should be closing it down. And that's what I aim for, and it always winds up going long. And I always wind up, on a normal podcast day, I always wind up going long, and I enjoy doing it. I have a lot of fun, and that kind of timing fits really well. But I was just kind of wondering what you guys think. Because right now, I'm not planning on changing anything, but, you know, as I was looking through my own podcasts and observing my own listening habits and my own reactions to the bigger podcasts, it occurred to me that, oh, you know what, maybe other people feel the same way about mine. So I figure I'll ask you guys. You know, totally up to you. You guys tell me what you think, and then I probably won't change anything that I do anyway. But, you know, it's nice to get feedback, right? Okay, cool. That wraps up the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. See how easy that was? Yeah, see, we're at the 6-minute mark. We have got to roll, people. So all that's left for this show is the Pod-O-Matic. Holy matrimony, Batman! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or your topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums, and I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Oh, you guys are awesome. First up is 59, which is from Stan. Hey, Stan. Stan says, what music group did you like as a teen but you hate now? Journey. He used to love Journey, and now I only like Journey songs remade as punk rock cover songs. So, sorry. Any of the corporate rock, really. I mean, REO Speedwagon, I can remember listening to tons of REO Speedwagon and thinking it was really cool, like even into college, really liking that REO Speedwagon sound. And now I look back and go, what the hell was I thinking? Ugh, it just does nothing for me. Eagles. I owned the Eagles' Best Of compilation that had Hotel California on it. I still like Hotel California as a song, but most of the rest of the Eagles stuff, you know, I'll sing along if it comes on, but I'm not really thrilled about it. And just recently, like 2 days ago, it was over this weekend, 2 days ago, I heard three Def Leppard songs all in a single day. How does that happen? I heard Armageddon It, I heard Photograph, and I heard Pour Some Sugar on Me, all in one day. And I used to love Def Leppard, and it was just, I wouldn't say I hate Def Leppard, but, you know, it's, you know, hard rock aimed at teenage boys. It's very misogynistic, it's very transparent, it's very corporate rock style. I don't know. Still like to sing along to Photograph, though. That was pretty good. Pour Some Sugar on Me used to be my absolute favorite. That was my favorite song for probably a year and a half. Coming out of high school, going into college, loved that song. And now it's like, whatever, next. We'll just skip over that crap. Seriously. I don't know. Tastes change. And I'm sure there's plenty of others. Those are the ones that come to mind right away. What I think of as the corporate rock. And I know Def Leppard's not really officially in the corporate rock group the way Journey and REO Speedwagon is, but maybe they are. I don't know. I haven't looked up definitions. You know what? Save me. Excellent. 37. And 37 is from Humongous, and it's going to have to wait 2 seconds. My voice is going weird. Hold on a second. Oh, that's so much better. Okay. Anyway, we left off at Humongous. Humongous says, does the film Dragon Slayer still hold up? know. I don't know. I have not seen Dragon Slayer since 1983. Like, I'm pretty sure I watched it on VHS when it first came out on VHS. And I remember being, you know, I thought it was cool, but I wasn't overly thrilled. Did I see it in the theater? I don't think I did. I think I only saw it at home. And either way, I remember thinking it was cool at the time. And as I've looked back on it in later years, anytime I hear it referenced, mentioned, my first thought is, oh, God, who would want to watch that again? So I can't say for sure. I haven't watched it in, you know, 30 years. But I'm going to imagine that the answer is no. No. I mean, honestly, after seeing Smaug in the Hobbit movies, the comparison to the dragon in Dragon Slayer is probably making it look pretty shabby at this point. But I don't know for sure. I mean, that was, the Dragon Slayer was more practical effects, wasn't it? Maybe I'm thinking of Dragon Heart. I don't, that was the Sean Connery one, right? Dragon Heart? Yeah, Dragon Slayer was the one with the lottery and the girl who disguised herself as a boy so she could avoid the lottery and didn't have to be the sacrifice to the dragon, and then whoever that blonde hero kid was had to go down and save her, and I'm sure that's the one. I'm sure that's Dragon Slayer, right? Yeah. And nah, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. And I am telling you right now, I am not going to give it the 100 minutes it would take to go back and give you an answer to this question. Sorry. But maybe someone else wants to pitch in. How's Dragon Slayer now after 30 years? You guys still like it? Woo! R2 likes it. 87. 87 takes me down. Did I number that one? Humongous? No, I didn't. God, I'm bad at this game. All right. 87 is from Ronster. Hey, Ron. This is part of Ron's batch of Christmas questions, and it says, hey, have you ever gone away for Christmas, or do you always stay home? Right now, I mean, yes, I have gone away for Christmas, but only gone away to visit family. Christmas has always either been here at home with my own family, or at home, you know, with my family when I was a kid, or we traveled somewhere to see family at Christmas. It was never taking like a ski vacation somewhere for Christmas or something like that. No, it's always been Christmas with family. And the last few years, when we were first married, my wife and I would alternate Christmases. It would be one Christmas at her mom and dad's house, one Christmas at my mom and dad's house. Her mom and dad live, you know, 3 miles away right outside of town here. And my mom and dad live 1,000 miles away. Well, before that it was even further away because they used to live in Spokane. But we used to alternate Christmases to be with family. And then that happened because we were oldest children. And then as other children got older and everyone else starts getting other families and other plans, and everyone kind of moved. And so we stopped going to see my parents at Christmas, and we go and see them during the summer. And her mom and dad moved Christmas to Saturday. So whatever the Saturday after Christmas is when their Christmas shows up. And so that way everyone goes out there. And our own Christmas Day, is here in our own house and has been for, I don't know, 6-7 years in a row, maybe longer than that. I can't remember. And I love having Christmas at home. Wouldn't have it any other way. And someday, you know, my oldest is going to get married in a couple of years here. And, you know, my kids are growing up. And eventually they'll have their wives and their families and their other plans. And we'll have to find other ways to handle Christmas then. But for right now, Christmas is always at home. And it's really nice. I really, really enjoy this. Excellent. Number 6. Way back to the top of the list. Number 6 is from Humongous again. Humongous says, my campaign to convince you to be a fan of Akira Kurosawa movies, did you know that the cool cowboy movie, The Magnificent Seven, is based on the Kurosawa movie, The Seven Samurai? Yeah, I know. I know. And yet, I've never seen The Magnificent Seven, and so therefore, its tie to The Seven Samurai is not persuading me. I mean, again, I tried to watch Yojimbo for its ties to other movies that were inspired by it later, that Yojimbo inspired The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Or, well, it inspired the original Fistful of Dollars. Yeah. And it inspired whatever that Bruce Willis one was, where he goes into the gangster town, and it's, I can't remember. Anyway, I tried to watch Yojimbo because it inspired many later movies, and I hated Yojimbo. Hated. So the fact that it inspired another movie is not helping your case here, because, you know, it could be a really, really stupid early version that then inspired greatness in other people later. And I don't think that's the case with The Seven Samurai, and I don't think it's the case with, hold on just 2 seconds, people. That was my family. They're on their way home. So, anyway, I certainly am willing to give these things a shot, but again, you haven't yet responded to my challenge. So, Humongous, you go ahead and watch Blood Car, and then you report back to me on it, and then you tell me what Kurosawa movie I should watch, and I will watch that one. That will be my intro. And you better make it good, because that's going to be the one that hooks me. I mean, if I'm not thrilled, I don't move on to the rest of them. But if I am, yeah, you know what, I'll keep watching. So, and also, I mentioned this on the forums, but I should mention that the Blood Car is a highly inappropriate movie. And so I just always make the assumption that when I talk to you guys as the general audience, I assume that, you know, we're all adults and we're all mature people here. But there's every possibility that some of you may be teenagers, for all I know. Some of you may be younger. And so therefore, when I tell you to go watch Blood Car, Humongous, if there's any chance that you are, say, a 14-year-old kid, you probably shouldn't watch Blood Car. If there's any chance that you are a 16-year-old kid, you should definitely watch Blood Car. But for God's sake, don't invite your parents to sit down and watch it with you unless you're pretty sure that they're going to be cool with really grotesque bloody violence and some really inappropriate nudity and sexual jokes and some really shockingly inappropriate kind of stuff. That's not what I was expecting. And yet, I mean, again, I thought the whole thing was hysterical. It was a wonderfully fun time for being such a horrible movie. But just be careful. So, but you watch Blood Car, and if you are a child, then grow up first, and then I'll get on to Kurosawa in a few years. But I'm pretty sure you're not 13 years old and trying to convince me to watch Kurosawa. I'm pretty sure. All right. So, but just in case, man, I would hate to get this one wrong. I would hate for some kid to be saying, hey, look, they've got Blood Car. Oh, we should totally watch this. Yeah, you know that guy I listened to, that Nerd Pride Radio? Yeah, this is, he recommended it, said this was really good. And then they're never allowed to listen to my podcast again. That would be terrible. So, I will watch whatever Kurosawa movie you want. You just watch Blood Car and then tell me what to watch. I will be happy to do it. All right. And by the way, as I'm speaking, I'm looking at the list here, and this question, was question number 6 on the list, because that's what R2 just rolled us. But I can see here, a little further down the list, where was it? There it is. Number 22. It's on the same page here. I'm just going to head this one off at the pass, and let's just pretend that R2 rolled. Oh my gosh. It came up 22. Hey, 22's from Humongous. Holy cow. Hi, Humongous. What's it say? My campaign to convince you to be a fan of Akira Kurosawa movies. Did you know that the cool cowboy movie A Fistful of Dollars starring Clint Eastwood is a direct copy of the Kurosawa movie Yojimbo? You see, you're not... Oh, I already told you I hate Yojimbo. What do you... This is not evidence. This doesn't help you. Oh, man. I can't believe I spotted that in here. That is great. I am just going to go ahead and mark that sucker as number 5. And... No, seriously, I would be glad to. Kurosawa is supposed to be great. I have heard all sorts of wonderful things about his movies. I have never actually watched any of them other than Yojimbo, and I only watched 20 minutes of that because it was terrible. So there you go. Let's see what R2's got next. 29. Hey, it's right here. Humongous. Let's see if it's a Kurosawa question. Humongous says, no, this is an easier one. All right. Humongous says, how many dice do you have? An estimate. And how old is the oldest one? How many dice do I have? All right, I can see the bucket from here. And the bucket is incomplete because I have loose dice all over. They don't, I mean, my match sets are usually in the little cases or in the little bag. they're in the bucket. The matched sets are in there, but I've bought like 3 pounds of dice over the years. The two times I went to Gen Con, I bought a pitcher full of dice both times to bring home. No, I think it was just the cup full of dice. And then I've also bought a pound of dice in another setting. And I just pick up random dice wherever I think they look cool. I've got some that are cheap plastic hollow things that aren't even, I mean, they're not even really usable dice, but they look like dice and they're just cool to have around. I've got giant foam ones on my desk at work, big old Nerf style dice that I use at work. And I've got dice everywhere. Right now I have 3 dice in my pocket that I don't even know why they're there. I mean, I don't know if it was just I was vacuuming and I found them on the floor, so they went in my pocket. I've got some in my junk drawer in my bedroom. I've got a small handful of them in the little change dish up on the entertainment center. There are dice everywhere in this house. So not including the ones that actually belong to other games. Like, I'm not going to count the dice from the Monopoly set or the dice from my HeroScape or whatever. But just dice that I have just for gaming, dice for Pathfinder, Dungeons & Dragons, other role-playing games. I would guess in that bucket, I don't know, how many dice can you fit in that bucket? 300? 400? I mean, for all I know, it might even be as much as 600 or 700. I don't know. It is a bucket that is a, what is that? Slightly larger than an ice cream bucket. And it is packed to the brim with dice. I mean, it is literally packed so full that I've got to, sometimes after we load all the dice back into it, I've got to kind of shake it down and tap it on the table a few times so the dice will settle enough to fit the lid on. And then that doesn't include the ones that I have scattered around. So I've got hundreds. And the oldest dice that I have, I still have 2 or 3 from my original Dungeons & Dragons basic red box set that I bought back in 1980. So my oldest dice that I know the age of, that I have had continuous possession of for the entire life of those dice, my oldest dice are 34 years old. There may be older ones in there that have been collected from other places that I don't know the provenance of. I don't know. Probably not, though. Probably 34 years is the oldest. That's certainly the longest ones, the oldest ones that have been in my continuous possession all this time. So there you go. And I love my dice, and I can't wait for Gen Con this year because look, Gen Con is going to be a road trip with my son, and we are going to have an awesome, awesome time. Gen Con is going to be a chance to meet some online friends that I've not got to spend a lot of time with in person, and I'm going to be thrilled to death with. Gen Con is a time to look at all the costumes and the people and to go play games with people I've never met and play games I've never played before and go to the shows and see everything. It's going to be wonderful, but also Gen Con means I'm going to buy myself some new dice. Because I always buy dice when I'm at Gen Con. Have you seen the dice stands? They've got the Chessex stands, and they've got just rows and rows and rows of dice in every color. It's like magic. It's like Scrooge McDuck wanting to dive into his chamber full of gold coins. That's what I want to do. I want to roll around in the dice tables at Gen Con. I won't. I'm pretty sure I won't. But you never know. I love the dice, and I cannot wait to get there to buy some more. Now I want to count my dice. This is pissing me off. I really want to count my dice because I want an exact number. I want to collect up all the ones I can find and get a count. Maybe I'll set my 8-year-old on that. Noah would love to count those dice. Yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll tell Noah that's what he should do this weekend, is tell me how many dice I have. I'll let him do it. 36. 36 is from Ronster. And Ronster says, have you ever, when you were a young lad, taken scissors to a magazine just to get cool pictures out of it? No, I never did that. Other than, you know, for a school project or a scout project or some other art thing where that's what we were supposed to do and they gave me some assignment to do it. I never cut up magazines for the cool pictures. There were times I wanted to, especially my dragon magazines. I would have loved to have cut the covers off and made, you know, like a wallpaper of cool dragon covers. But I couldn't bear to damage my magazines, so I didn't. However, you have reminded me that my dad, when I was in junior high, I remember my dad working very diligently to make a breast collage for, I think it was a graduation gift for, it was like a friend of his from way, way back. And it was a graduation gift for that guy's oldest son. Or maybe, no, maybe it was the general, General Larson. Maybe it was for his kid. I can't remember. Anyway, his oldest son is graduating from high school, I think, and going off to college. And so, you know, here he is, 18-year-old man, off to make his own way in the world. And so my dad went through a bunch of old Playboy and Penthouse magazines and very carefully cut out nothing but breasts and then glued them on and framed it and made a lovely breast collage to be shared with this young graduate. And then when the guy's second son graduated, he did another one. And I remember, because I was a little older then, I was in high school for the second one. And so he let me actually, I didn't see the magazines, so I wasn't seeing the full nude pictures, but I did see his pile of cutout breasts as he's arranging them. And I remember him discussing the artwork of it because, you know, well, my first one was a little sloppy. I was just doing anything. And then now there's a certain craft to it, son. And he would lay it out. He was saying it all tongue in cheek, but it was really funny. And it was a good gag gift for graduation. And there go all those magazines that I didn't even know where he kept those. Oh man, if only I could have found those when I was 15 instead of having him cut them all up. Oh well. It was a simpler time. Sweet. That's again 36. These dice are broken. Now he's in pain because I shook him. What a wuss. 63. 63 is from Stan again. All right. And Stan says, of the literary classics that kids are often forced to read, which one do you like the best and which one did you hate the most? We've already discussed classics that I hate in an earlier podcast, like Brave New World. Yeah, didn't like it. The sci-fi was just so out of date, and it was so... Animal Farm, didn't enjoy it. There was just a bunch of them that I think most classics I just didn't like when I was forced to read them because I was being forced to read them. I think I just wasn't mature enough emotionally, socially to get really what they were going for. I was a bright kid, but, you know, a little stunted in some ways. And I think if I had saved those until I was older or until I was motivated to read them on my own, I think I would have enjoyed them better. But... classics that I loved, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, is Tolkien a classic? Because when I first read The Hobbit, but see, I wasn't forced to read that one. Loved The Hobbit. Same thing with the Narnia books before I realized that they were any sort of allegory. They were just an awesome, awesome story. But again, yeah, those are classics, but they're not ones that they force you to read in school. Of the stuff I was forced to read in school, I didn't like some of the Shakespeare they forced us to read, but I did like Macbeth because I got it and it made sense to me. And I thought that was kind of cool. And I did like the Canterbury Tales because I liked the concept of it. I don't know that I like reading them necessarily, but I like the discussion of them, the idea of what they represented. I don't know. I probably got a better answer to that. I'm sure. In fact, I think we had discussions on these on the boards after the last question like this one. So I should probably go look those up. But I'm not gonna, because I think I only have time for one more question, so we should just hurry on. 37. 37. Oh, we did that one already. All right, hold on. 73. Let's turn them the other way. 73 says, oh, it's Talvin. Talvin asks, have you ever been skydiving? No. That looks scary. The closest I ever got was a ride at Worlds of Fun, I think. Yeah, it was Worlds of Fun. We were there, me and my wife, before we had kids. We took her little brother and sister there, and they had this one ride, and I can't remember what it was, some giant swing thing where they hook you into this harness, and they've got the, I mean, it's just a huge swing, and they crank the thing up, and they haul you all the way up to the top of this massive tower, and then whenever you're ready, you pull the little ripcord, and it just lets you go, and you swing. You just fall, and you swing, and it's really, really scary. And that is the closest to skydiving I will ever get and that I ever want to get because I'm a chicken. And while that momentary thrill would be really cool it really, really would. The risk of death for that momentary thrill is too significant for me. I mean, I'm scared of heights, and that's part of the thrill for me, is that I'm really, really scared of heights, and so I enjoy experiences like that when I get them because I like facing that fear, and that fear of heights just heightens the thrill that much, so to speak. But no, I've never been skydiving, and I'm pretty sure I never will be skydiving. That was a short one. One more. 42? Hey, we get to finish off with Humongous. We like that. Have you ever played Car Wars? You know I've played Car Wars. I loved Car Wars. Car Wars was my introduction to wargaming, of all things. Car Wars, with all the tactical movement and, I mean, the minute moving your cars as you clash on the highway, moving your cars just one square at a time down the highway, designing the cars. Oh, I loved the designs. I loved coming up with engines and armor and weapons and, you know, working within your cost restrictions and your weight restrictions, and I loved every bit of it. Had a great time. The game sometimes got a little tedious if you had more than, you know, a few vehicles. Like any war game, can get really, really tedious when you're dealing with something that handles everything on such a minute scale, and yet can have, I mean, it was no Starfleet Battles. Lord knows, Starfleet Battles was the worst. Starfleet Battles was great to design, great to set up, and then a nightmare to play, because every single game of Starfleet Battles was, okay, my ship's lined up, alright, my ships are lined up, alright, cool, let's go, and then literally round one, everyone launches shuttles and torpedoes and fighter craft, and now suddenly, even if you just start off with one battleship on each side, now suddenly the air is filled with space. There's no air, because it's in space, because it's Star Trek. The map is now filled with each side having dozens, if not hundreds, of items all in motion, all at once, all needing to be tracked with their own speed ratings and their own, and it bogged down so bad I've never finished a game of Starfleet Battles. I played when I was young, maybe 6 or 7 games, never finished a one, because it was just never had that kind of time. Car Wars, on the other hand, oh, we would play right down to the bloody end, whether it was just a side-by-side Mad Max-style highway fight, or we laid out the whole city map and we're crashing into buildings and hugging it around corners and all that stuff. Awesome either way. We loved Car Wars. I played it a bunch when I was young, junior high, and then a little bit into high school, and then played it again when I was in college and had a great time then. Haven't played it since. I should maybe look up a copy of it and introduce my kids to it. But yeah, my gaming time is a little bit limited now, so maybe not. We'll see. But yes, played Car Wars, loved Car Wars. Steve Jackson Games was brilliant. I loved everything from Steve Jackson that I could find back in those days. Awesome, awesome stuff. But sadly, we're at the half-hour mark. I'm done for the day. So nothing left but a recap. GLaDOS?
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. Opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. If you want to do something nice for my podcast, you recommend it to a friend, because if you enjoy it, then spread the word and let other people enjoy it. Please, word of mouth is the best advertising I've got. Don't forget to check out my free games on the free games page, blah, 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 blah. Roll down. And if you want to contact me, email at mike@nerdprideradio.com, Twitter @nerdprideradio, Facebook @facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me, you know it, sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out, spend our days together, be best friends in the world, and we will have fun. Now it's time for Listener Betrayal. This is where I go out to my forums before I start recording and I say, hey, I'm recording. You guys want to add anything? And then I come back at the end and I read off what you've wrote. So Talvin says, adamantium or mithril? Which one's the better fantasy metal? Mithril. Mithril because of its, I know adamantium is tough, or adamantine, or whatever the names are. Uh-oh, family's home. Hold on a second. Okay, anyway, it's going to be a little bit noisier in here, but we'll go ahead and finish this one off. Mithril, because right now, I am... Okay, I'm back. It's going to be a little bit noisier in here, but... God damn it! Okay, it's going to be a little bit noisier here, but we are back. And my wife is doing this on purpose, and I... Are you done? Every time I start it back up, she yells something out here. Noah, are you ready for your homework? Hey, Eli, you got that book? Yeah, she's being funny. All right. But the correct answer was Mithril. And,
I think the correct answer was no, I don't have any homework.
God darn it. I'm in the listener betrayal portion of the show. We are almost done. I can walk away from this in just mere moments. She thinks she's funny. Yeah, well. Okay. Yeah, enough of that question. I think we've done that to death. Mithril. I was going to do a long explanation of how right now my Pathfinder character is desperately looking for a Mithril shirt, but, you know, it's $1,100, and she doesn't quite have that, so I got to wait a little bit. But in the meantime, hey, Talvin also says, think of the biggest jerk of a player you ever gamed with. What was the jerkiest thing he ever did to ruin the game for everyone else? I don't know. I've never had a bunch of jerky players. It's just not... I mean, the absolute worst that I can think of wasn't even that bad. It was Lucy, who is in our current Pathfinder game. When I was in college, I gamed with... Because I lived with... But I gamed with her husband. And he was, and still is, a bit of a rules lawyer. And just in his nature. And he was a great role player, and we had a great time with him, and things were really good. But every once in a while, he just got a little rules lawyery. He was very dead set on, he wanted to, he had an archer, and the way the rules set up the archer, I thought it was a little overpowered. And so I kind of restricted him back a little bit because I didn't think it was quite fair, and he was very upset about that, and he was very, anyway. But it wasn't like he was out to ruin the game for anybody else, and it's not like he did stuff that did ruin the game for anybody else. We all had a great time. But he was the only player that I really had disagreements with, I suppose. So, what? Okay, but that was in the spirit of the game, honey. My wife is still bitter about the time that my brother left a grenade on his corpse in paranoia and blew her up. But again, that was in character and really, really funny. But she's a bitter woman. She's been holding on to that for 20 years. So, again, I've been fortunate. I've never had to game with jerks. I mean, maybe some online players in like some email campaigns I did years and years ago. But you know, if I wasn't enjoying those, I just didn't stick with them. And so I can't really think of any good examples. I mean, again, like I say, my one rules lawyer, and he wasn't even that bad. I mean, I'm like making him out to be the worst player I've ever had, and yet he was still a really good player, and we had a great time. It was just, he was the one that I had the most differences with. He was less willing to put up with my railroading, I suppose. So I don't know. I don't have a good answer to this question. Next from Talvin. Talvin has lots of listener betrayal today. Thoughts on quantum computing? Not really. Don't know enough about it to make any statements. I know that, you know, at some point we're going to see a sea change in how computing is done, that we're going to move away from, or else move to something that augments the more solid state electronics that we have right now. And you know, we've managed to make microchips smaller and smaller and smaller, and pack more information into smaller spaces consistently for decades. And eventually we're going to hit some physical limit, and we're going to need to switch over to something, whether it's, you know, some sort of organic computing or quantum computing, or, you know, doing our computing on some sort of light matrices, or who knows what. I don't know. Quantum computing is a term that I've heard bandied about, but I don't know enough to make any commentary, so I can't really help you. But that does bring us to the very end of the show, because the next thing written here is me saying, we're done! Say goodnight, R2.